So lately I traded in my iPhone 6 and got an iPhone 7. It's a bigger one. It's like the senior adult version. And so one of the things that I use my phone for, I don't know if you do, but I use it as my alarm clock. You know, I used to have an alarm clock that I use, and actually the one that I kind of like actually showed the time on the ceiling. So when you woke up in the middle of the night, you didn't even have to move. You just could look. Oh, it's 2 a.m. I need to go back to sleep. And I always kind of liked that. But now, but you could only really set it for one or maybe two different times. But, oh, well, mine, I got like 12 different times I can wake up at any given time because I'm thinking, well, what do I feel like tomorrow, you know? And then I also have tunes. And so I usually have one that wakes me up around 6 o'clock. It wakes me up. But then about 40 minutes later, there's another one that goes off. That if I hear what that sound is, I know I'm in trouble and I need to get moving. And but the one that I play that is my official wake-up, and Lisa just loves this song.
No.
You know, you could be slower at responding to that. It's called Easy Street. And I love this because it really is obnoxious for in the morning, because you can hear that. So every morning at 6:02, that's what we listen to. And it actually causes for a whole elbow in the ribs, too, to get you to move. It's amazing. So, because Lisa's like, turn that off. And, oh, okay. So now, you know, my cell phone, it's amazing. I mean, the technology in this thing is amazing. I mean, you could send the Apollo astronauts with this thing. You know, they didn't even have this. You know, it's an amazing thing. And for me to set it on my, I don't wake up, when I set it on the counter and I hear it every morning, I don't think, I wonder how that got there. I know how it got there because I put it there. And I know how this technology came about because somebody made it. Some engineers got together. They figured it out. People put it together. They shipped it. I bought it. That's how it happened. It didn't happen by accident. And this is a pretty complex piece of machinery. But we're going to look at things that are way more complex as evidences for God. And so, you know, when you're talking to people and they're having struggles with faith and belief in God, it's, you know, you take your phone and say, you know, this whole universe is way more complex than this. And you wouldn't think this happened by accident. So you'll be seeing some of that as we're talking today. So today we're continuing our study about a reasonable faith. And really we're dealing with the question, is there evidence for God? Is there really an evidence that God exists? And, you know, since we're in church, you know, the answer for us would be yes. We think there's evidence for God. So we're going to be looking at that today. And what I want you to understand is there's facts out there. Facts are facts. That's just a simple thing. Truth is truth. Facts are facts. Facts are facts. They're unemotional. They don't have an agenda. They are what they are. You know, the simple definition we talked about last week about truth, that which conforms to reality, fact, or actuality. And we affirmed last week 4 things about truth. It exists, that it actually is out there. There is such a thing as truth. It is knowable. You can know it. It is absolute. It is true. It isn't false. There is an absoluteness to it, and it's exclusive. But there's something we need to remember, and this is a phrase that has been on my wall for about 25 years in my office. I read this a long time ago. I was taking some additional studies at Bethel Seminary, and it was like this amazing quote. And it says this: truth and reality evoke no behavior. All behavior is based on people's perception and an interpretation of truth and reality. Because have you ever noticed people can see the exact same thing and draw a completely different conclusion? And it's because we look at things through our filters. And we need to be very careful that when we are looking at evidence and when we are looking at the facts that point to God, that we see them for what they are. And there are some things that people had held to years and years and years ago that they don't hold to so much any longer. And it's interesting because the creationists, or the people who believe in God creating the heavens and the earth, are the ones that usually point out the faultiness of those arguments. Because we don't want to base things on wrong arguments. So it's very important for us to understand it's our perception. Now, when somebody comes and they say to us things like, you know, I don't really believe in God. You probably have heard that before. Sometimes they are a little bit more militant. They'll say, there is no God. And I've heard that before too. You know, the thing that we need to understand is that we first of all should not ever get defensive. Don't be defensive. Don't take it personally. They're just talking about God. And then we also should ask clarifying questions. Ask them, well, why do you say that? And the reason we do that is because of what 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 tells us. Remember, in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. There's an aspect of this that we're to be an analyst. We are to look at the questioner who is asking the question. So you see, when people say there is no God, or I just don't believe in God, they may not be actually meaning what you think they're meaning. They may be having a reaction to something that has happened in their life. So you might want to ask a question, well, would you tell me why you say that? Or you might say, well, that kind of surprises me. Would you share how you came to that conclusion? Or you might ask, would you share with me your concept of the God people believe in? Because it may be that they're not actually doubting God's existence. They're just doubting a concept of God. I've had this happen before. There was a man that I knew in Minnesota. He was a pastor of a church. He had resigned the church, and I was talking to him, and he said that he had become an atheist. And I was like, huh, because I had just read an article about how many former pastors were now atheists just that week. And I met this guy, you know, no coincidence, providence. And so we were talking about this. I said, well, why are you an atheist? That just seems, how do you go from there? And he said, you know, my mom was this saintly woman. She was married to my dad. He was a devout Christian, and he died. And a few years after he died, she married this man. And within a couple years, he murdered her. And now he's in prison. And I don't understand how God did that. Why did God allow that to happen? And I listened to him, and I said, well, you know, you're asking a question about why did God allow it to happen. I said, it sounds like you believe in God. You just don't trust him. And he goes, yeah, I don't think he's a loving God. So we had a different conversation. I wish I could tell you that the scales fell off of his eyes and he came to renew his faith, but he did not, as to the best of my knowledge. But we need to be able to diagnose to some degree. Why are you asking these questions? They might have been hurt by a legalistic church. They might have been involved in a cult. Their concept of God may be so foreign to what your concept of God is that you would say, yeah, I don't believe in that God either. So we want to be very careful when we respond to people. So what about the evidences? Are there really evidences? Well, the Bible tells us there are. Romans chapter 1, verses 19 through 23 says this. Apostle Paul says, for what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. You notice God's saying they saw it, it was clear, they knew it, but they didn't honor him. And then their thinking became corrupted. Their hearts became darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. So they, instead of worshiping the creator, they began to worship creation. So the Bible tells us, even the Apostle Paul was dealing with people who were misreading the evidences for God. So what are these evidences? What are some of these evidences? And we're only going to cover three this morning. There's a lot. Those websites I talked to you about, it's important for you to look at those and go to those websites, look what they say as far as their answers. But let me just also just say another thing. It's important, it is important to go and learn some of these answers, but it's more important to read your Bible and know it and understand the core doctrines of the Christian faith, because without those you can drift into things that are not true. And you'll find that when you have a good, healthy Bible study as well as looking at the evidences, you'll see how well they actually go together. So when we look at the evidences, we are going to look at design, and that is talking about complexity of the earth. You know, the earth is a lot more complex than anybody ever really realized it, and as scientists continue to study it, it becomes even more complex. The earth's size and corresponding gravity holds the atmosphere in of nitrogen and oxygen gases. It extends about 50 miles out over above the Earth's surface. If we were smaller, kind of like Mercury, it would be impossible to have a life-sustaining atmosphere. If the Earth were larger, like Jupiter, then there would be it would contain free hydrogen, and nothing could live there. So Earth is the only planet that we're aware of in the entire solar system and the galaxy that is equipped with an atmosphere of the right mixture of gases to sustain plant and animal and human life. Not only have this great size, the right size, but we're also the right distance from the sun. You know, on the planet at any given place, on the surfaces, we see things can average from 30 degrees below zero Fahrenheit to 120 degrees above Fahrenheit. Believe it or not, living in Minnesota, we saw 30 below zero, and we also saw about 117, didn't quite get to 120 above. It was, you know, Minnesota, you think it's always cold. It's not. It gets very hot sometimes there. So it's very interesting, you know, that it's that way. But there's a moderation that helps to have the seasons and helps the earth to continue to thrive. If we were further away from the sun, we'd freeze to death. If we were closer to the sun, we would burn up. Life would be impossible. The earth rotates on its axis, which allows the sun to, you know, the temperature to moderate during the day and night. If it didn't do that, one side would always be hot, one side would always be cold, like the moon is. Some other things about the earth, it's going around in its orbit about 67,000 miles per hour, and all of that is to help it to stay the right temperature. Our moon, perfect size and distance. You know, what the moon does is as it goes around the planet, it raises tides, lowers tides. And what that does, it kind of is a sloshing motion of the oceans and all the tidal currents, rivers, and some of the larger lakes. And that's important to keep the water from going stagnant. It helps to kind of keep things clean and kind of like a wash machine agitating. So it's kind of cool to think we're kind of in this gigantic agitator, you know, just kind of having the oceans kind of sloshing around. But the moon isn't so big that it would pull the water up and over the continents. So it is there to help maintain life. And that's pretty cool. Water, and we look at the water. It's an amazing thing. 97% of the water is found in our oceans. We are mostly water. Plants, mostly water. Animals, mostly water. It has a wide margin of boiling, from boiling point to freezing, which allows us to live in an environment with fluctuating changes in temperature, but yet we maintain a 98.6 degree body temperature for the most part. Water is a universal solvent. Well, why is that important? Well, it allows all those minerals and chemicals that are vital to our health to flow freely through our veins. Gets to the smallest capillaries because it allows it all in. water has a whole way of recycling itself. You know, the oceans are salty, but as the water evaporates, it's fresh water that goes over our land masses and waters the plants and gives us fresh drinking water. When it freezes from the top down so that fish can continue to live and thrive. So when we look at the aspect of water, we should actually be amazed at how precise the planet is, as complex and precise that it is. I mean, we could talk about a lot of other things about how the gas giants that are on the outer rings of orbits around the sun intercept asteroids and comets, you know, so that we're not constantly being hit by space debris. The fact that we're all on the orbits of the planets are for the most part on an even plane. It's all very precise. Now, you know, if we were to look at a watch that is completely precise, and I remember this as I was coming to faith, you know, I wanted to know evidence. It's because my house wasn't a Christian home. When I asked about God, my parents said, we don't know. We don't know if there's a God. We don't know if there's an afterlife. Some of my extended family, the very devout Christians, loved the Lord. Other parts of my extended family, devout atheists, did not love the Lord. And so I started asking when people were starting sharing the faith, well, how do I know there's a God? And when this argument about the complexity of Earth and how the universe worked, and they likened it to putting a watch all in parts in a box. And if you had the gears and the hand and the hands and the crystal and the body of it, and you shake the box trying to get it all together, well, how likely is that going to happen? Well, it's not going to happen. So when we talk to people about the design and complexity of the Earth, we can say it really kind of screams that there is a creator. Now, the human brain is an amazing thing. It takes in all the colors and objects that we see. It takes in the sounds that we hear. It alerts us. Like when we're driving down the road and something is flashing in our in our rearview mirror, we look and go, ooh, blue and red light. That's not good. So, we're processing the sound of the siren. We're processing the lights. Or when we go outside, like this morning when I went outside, it was cold, a little chilly this morning. Our body senses temperatures around us. It holds and processes all of our emotions, thoughts, and memories. And it is constantly dealing with things. It keeps track of all ongoing functions of the body. While you're sitting there, you've been blinking. I've been watching. You've been blinking. But you probably haven't noticed it. You've been breathing. Your heart's been beating. Your body's been digesting. If you were here for breakfast fellowship, your body's been digesting that. Your brain is regulating all of that. They figure that our brains process about 1 million messages per second. I think that's amazing. No wonder sometimes when I go into the kitchen, I go, now why did I come in here for? Stephen Hawking, famous atheist, died recently. And this is what he said. I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. Now, I'm looking at this, and he's using really interesting terminology. He says, it's like a computer when its components fail. Well, when did we ever see a computer and its components just kind of randomly, spontaneously are created? They're not. Men and women have studied computer engineering, and they have put these things together, just like the phone, as I was talking about it. It is an amazing device. It did not happen by accident. So he is trying to disprove God by using something that is created. Franklin Graham said this, "I wish I could have asked Mr. Hawking who he thought designed the human brain. The designers at HP, Apple, Dell, and Lenovo have developed amazing computers, but none come even close to the amazing capabilities of the human mind. Who do you think designed the human brain? Well, the master designer, God himself. I wish Stephen Hawking could have seen the simple truth that God is the creator of the universe, he loved to study and everything in it." You know, here he's looking at this amazing universe and the complexities of it, but yet his heart and his mind rejected God. DNA has probably been the most significant discovery in the last 20 years. And it has shaken a lot of atheists. DNA, every cell has detailed instruction encoded within it. Every cell in your body has a DNA code. And it's very detailed in how one's body should develop. It's not just a simple code, it is a complex code. It actually resembles computer codes. Now, a computer code looks like this. You know, it's 11001010, you know, all of that. Now, DNA is a little bit different, but similar. It uses letters that are relating to the four chemicals found in DNA, and it would look similar to this, C, G, T, G, you know, go one, you see all those letters. But we'd go a little further. Actually, we'd go about 3 billion out. 3 billion of these letters in every human cell. That's amazing. Now, I'm old enough to remember at Suitland High School down in Prince George's County, we had a gigantic room that was a computer room. And they did allow us students to take computer class there. I was not interested in it. I really didn't know what they did in there. But I remember one thing they did that did not look like fun. They had these cards, and they were punching holes in them. Now, Lisa, she took that class, not there, but where she went to school, she took that class. And, you know, and that was the computer programming. You had a stack of cards. When I mentioned this earlier, the young people went, "What is that?" You know, so it was a stack of cards that you'd put in a computer, and it would feed it into the computer, and it would write. That was, you wrote the program with cards. You did not want to drop them. If you drop them, you better have numbered them, or you're in trouble. Can you imagine 3 billion cards? And the complexity of that? This is interesting. Dr. Francis Collins, he's actually the guy who mapped it out. He was the director of the Human Genome Project. And when they announced that he had mapped out, you know, the DNA, he said this, "It is humbling for me and awe-inspiring to realize that we have caught the first glimpse of our own instruction book, previously known only to God." An amazing quote. What's even more amazing is Dr. Anthony Flew, who is like the poster professor for atheists. He's written a lot of books, several books, on atheism. He debated Christians, trying to show them that there is no such thing as God. When he started studying the DNA, he said this: superintelligence is the only good explanation for the origin of life and the complexity of nature. And he wrote a book about it. He wrote a book how this turned his atheism upside down, and now he believed in God. Now, he said that, I don't have a relationship with God. It's not a personal thing. It's a rational thing. He says, I'm not believing in any God of any particular religion. So, to the best of our knowledge, he did not become a Christ follower. However, he did say that of all the religions, he was more favorable to Christianity. So it would be my hope and my prayer that maybe in those last moments, last days, God broke through to him. But he had a turnaround because he saw evidence that he was pretty sure was going to make him even more of an atheist, and it turned his life upside down. Isn't that amazing? And, you know, we should be able to share these things. And because when they say, you know, all scientists believe in evolution and, you know, spontaneous, coming of life from nothing, that isn't true. And when you share these things, you can tell people, listen, I'm not really a scientist. I'm not a scientist. I'm not even a son of a scientist, nor am I a grandson of a scientist. My great-grandfather dabbled in it a little bit, but nobody else seemed to be interested in it. But it doesn't keep us from being able to look at some of these things and say, yeah, this just doesn't make sense. How can you look at something like DNA and think it just came by chance? Even Dawkins, another premier atheist who says he still doesn't believe in God, he thinks that maybe aliens came here and seeded DNA into the primordial soup. He'd rather believe in an alien than God. So why is this important? It is important. I'll tell you why it's important. It's important because Jesus is the author of life. The Bible tells us that. The Apostle Peter preaching to the people gathered in Jerusalem right after the resurrection of Christ, he talked about Jesus in terms of being the author of life. The Apostle Paul and John reminds us that nothing was created without Christ, that he created all that there is. And that if indeed Jesus is the author of life, and if he is the creator of all that there is, then his statement rings true. I am the way and the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. It's important for us to be able to not just tell people, here's an evidence about God, that gets them a little bit of the way, but we need to bring them and show them that Jesus is the Savior, that Jesus is the God that we want them to know and to love, because he is the only way to the Father. He is truth embodied. All truth is embodied in Jesus, and he is life. There is no life apart from Christ. So as you are continuing and you look at some of the questions that maybe you may have doubts, and you're looking for answers. Or maybe there's people that are starting to pop up in your life and asking you, well, why do you believe this? Allow the Holy Spirit to work in you and to be able to start gently sharing some of these evidences for God. Allow it to make you firm in your own faith so that you will be confident in sharing about he who is the way, the truth, and the life.